is usually best looking around the age of 20 when they get married. And Bas Chof is Kibas Zayin, a little girl the age of 7 is innocent. Even if she did some Aveira, she's a Ktana, can be held responsible. So Bas Chof Kibas Zayin Lechet. Rashi quotes the other version of the Medrash, that Bas Kuf Kibas Chof Lechet, because the Bezen Shalmaila doesn't punish till the age of 20. Bezen Shalmata punishes from the age of 12 on, from the age of 13 on, by girl, by boy. And only Bezen Shalmaila only punishes from the age of 20 on. And Bas Chof Kibas Zayin, with respect to Yofi, beauty. She was as beautiful at the age of 20, she was at the age of 7. So that's why Makshim Ha'olam, it doesn't make sense. A girl is much more beautiful at the age of 20 than at the age of 7. So why are you comparing this version of the Medrash? It doesn't make any sense. Bas Chof Kibas Zayin Liyofi, she's better looking at 20 than at the age of 7. So some of the Mefarshim explain what it means is that a girl at the age of 20 who's good looking and realizes it can sometimes become very arrogant if she lets it get to her head. There's a famous Gemara in the first Perek in Tainus where the Gemara says that one of the Tanoim met the king's daughter. I forgot about which Tanoim. He was very ugly. But she made a comment, if you're such an intelligent rabbi, you're so smart, how come this Chachma Mufuere is Bikli Mechur? How come you look so ugly? So he says, the reason why I'm so learned is because I'm so bad looking. If I would be good looking, my looks would go to my head, and I wouldn't succeed so well in my studies. So she asked, but there are handsome men who are scholars. So she said, he answered, if they would be ugly, they would be bigger scholars. So the Gemara has such a consideration that good looking people, you know, from a fact, you go out with girls, no? The single people go out with girls. So you know that some of the girls who are very good looking are arrogant. So that's why it's sometimes a very good idea not to marry a girl who's too good looking. She'll be too good looking, she'll be arrogant. So that's what some of the Mefarshim suggest. The Girsa and the Medrash that Rashi quotes, Bas Chof Kibas Zayin, a girl who's 7 years old who's good looking doesn't go to her head. She doesn't know what that means yet. She's too young to understand that the beauty can lead her to all kinds of things. She can get away with all kinds of things because she's so good looking. So that's what that version means, that Bas Chof Kibas Zayin, she was good looking and it didn't go to her head. So it was very good looking. So the pasuk says that Avraham Avinu came L'spod l'sara v'livko sar. Rashi quotes the Medrash, what brought about the death of Sara? She heard about the Akedah. She heard about the Akedah. I mean, Avraham Avinu never told her in the first place about the Akedah. He took his son, he said goodbye, I'm going on a trip. He didn't tell his wife where they're going, why they're going. And then when she heard about it later, one version of the Medrash has it that when Yitzchak came back, he told her what they had done. So she almost got, a heart attack. She got a heart attack and she died. Well, why did she die? Because he almost lost his life. And others say that the Sutton told her different versions of the marriage. But apparently Avraham Avinu didn't tell her in advance. Some of the married couples today feel that in order to show their devotion to each other, they have to reveal to each other all the secrets. You see from the Chumash that it's not so. Avraham and Sarah were a happily married couple, and they didn't reveal to each other the secrets. Whatever he had in Nevuah, and Nevuah is a private thing, he didn't tell his wife. Whenever she got in Nevuah, she didn't tell her husband. You find throughout the Chumash like that. Yitzchak Avinu, Yaakov Avinu. One had a Nevuah, they didn't tell the other one what the Nevuah was. It's not necessary to tell everything to your spouse. Sometimes you want to tell some things to somebody, so you tell your chavrusa. You don't have to tell your wife everything. What do you have to aggravate your wife? A lot of times a husband is aggravated in the office. He's aggravated in shul. Somebody insulted him in shul. And then he comes home and he pours out his aggravation to his wife. The wife's going to be aggravated for a month. He gets over it the next day. The next day there's something else. Taras Lachmanis Meshachas HaSarishonis. But the wife is going to remember that her husband was aggravated. She's going to hold it against that guy who caused the aggravation. The husband already forgot about the aggravation. But sometimes it's not so smart to tell a wife all the aggravation. You don't have to tell. Some people think when they get married, they have to reveal. Every family has skeletons in the closet. You have to tell your spouse about all of the schmutz in the family. It's not necessary. The wife doesn't have to know. You didn't have to know it either. But you fell into that family. You married. You know, you're in this family. You're one of the children. So the father has chasrinus. The mother has chasrinus. The grandparents have. Brothers, sisters. You're not mechuyev to tell. You shouldn't tell all of the chasrinus to the spouse unless it's necessary for them to know it in order to know how to proceed in life. But if it's not necessary, it's not right. Usually, when people hear that someone died, so they're distraught and they're sad and they start crying. And then after crying for a while, they get over it, and then they prepare a hesped. And the hesped is an intelligent presentation of who the person was who died. So usually you have the reverse, that a person hears about a death in the family. First there's bechiah, and then there's hesped. Here the pasuk says, lispod l'sorav l'vkosot, to deliver hesped and then to cry. Usually the crying is just without thinking. That comes first, and the hesped is after thinking who the person was. So the Pashto says that there are two kinds of bechiyah, two different things. See, there's one bechiyah if a person dies young, and they leave a lot of young children, and there's an almana and yisaimim, it's a tragedy. So you cry about the fact that there's a tragedy. Sarah was 127 years old. She lived the whole life. Her son was a Nishken Yosin. He was 37 years old. Her son Yitzchak was born when she was 90. He was 37 years old. So there's no great tragedy. What, he wanted to live till longer? He wanted to live till 200. He lived till 175. Wanted to live till 175. Wasn't the world's greatest tragedy. My father died a couple of months ago. He was 94 years old. It wasn't such a great tragedy. My father died. So I didn't cry so much over the tragedy. My father was old, he wasn't well, and then he had a sickness which they couldn't live with the condition that he had. They had to do surgery, and he knew himself the surgery may or may not succeed, 50-50 chance, and it didn't succeed. So he died a week after the surgery. He would have died anyway because of the condition that he had. So over here, he's not really crying over the tragedy. She died at an old age, 127. But then, after you deliver the hesped and you say who the person was, so then you cry over the loss of such a wonderful person. It's not a tragedy that the person died, but you cry over the loss. See, I didn't cry so much when my father died, but when people tell me now, oh, they heard that my father died, so I start to cry over the fact that I lost my father, not that a tragedy occurred, and no little Yisaimim. There's no little Yisaimim, just I don't have my father to talk to.
So
are we saying that when it comes to Chanukah, we don't see a tragedy. We see it as an actually good thing because we're going to Olam Habayim, going to Kafar. People usually perceive, let's say a woman dies and she leaves all these yisaimim, or her husband dies and leaves an almana, you know, a big tragedy. So our perception is that it's a tragedy. We say bracha baruch dayanamis. When a wonderful thing happens, when our perception is that it's a wonderful thing, we say atayva meitim. When our perception is that it's a tragedy, we say dayanamis. We're supposed to have emuna that it's not a tragedy, but we cry as if it were a tragedy. So really, the Gemara says if a person cries, in a certain sense, it's like apikursus. He's implying that if I would be running the world, I wouldn't do like the Rabban Shalom. I would do a better job. I wouldn't cause this woman to die to leave all the yisaim. I wouldn't cause the husband to die to leave an almana and so on. So it's really a bit of an apikursus to cry over the fact that there's a tragedy that occurred. So the Gemara says, Gimel Yamim Lebechi. The person should cry for 3 days. What does it mean the person should cry for 3 days? So the Sfasemis and the Chidushim on the end of Masechah Shabbos points out, it's not a chiv to cry for 3 days. If a person can control himself, he shouldn't cry at all over the tragedy. Because he should really have a munah that there was no tragedy. But if a person cries the first 3 days, so he won't be punished. Gimel Yamim Lebechi is a heter. Is a heter. If he cries more than 3 days, then there's no heter, so then it's taken as apikursus. First 3 days, like Onis Rachmana Patrin. How can you expect the person to be so mechazik himself in Amunah that he should believe that in the face of such a tragedy, so many people were killed by the Nazis, so he shouldn't cry? How can you not cry? It looks like a tragedy. You're supposed to have Amunah that is not a tragedy. So the Chazal limited it. They said 3 days. You can't control yourself. So he said, "Einas Rachmana Patre." After the first 3 days, so then he should be able to control himself. If he cries later, it should only be the crying over Chaval al diavdim v'lo mishtachin, not over the aspect of the tragedy. He should cry over the fact that that was a nice person, and we'll be missing that individual. The hesped that was delivered was lechvod sora. The Gemara has a question whether hesped is kovad achaim or kovad amesim. So the Gemara's conclusion is that it's kovad amesim. Yikorah de shachve. The Gemara in Sanhedrin has a suffix. Is it yikorah de chay, kovad achaim, or kovad amesim? So the maskan is that it's kovad amesim, and therefore the Gemara says if a person leaves a tzavor, that he doesn't want a hesped. So he's mechalan his kovad, so he doesn't want it. If he's not mechalan his kovad, so we assume that there is a din of kovad abriyas. The original pasuk of kovad abriyas we said is lo yitamo in Parsha Samor. It says that the kohen is not permitted to be mitam and amesim unless it's one of the seven relatives who died. So it says if his sister dies, a single sister dies, lo yitamo. Gemara has a machlekes Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva, and we pass like Rabbi Akiva lo yitamo is a chayvo. So chuyif to be mitame to the zayin kroivim to show kovad abriyas. So that original pasuk happens to be speaking about kovad amesim. The Gemara says in the beginning of the second parak in Ksubas that it's kalachayim for kovad achayim. Kovad achayim is more chomer than kovad amesim. Here also, the hesped is kovad amesim. If the mesim, if the nifter is moichel on his kovad, he said he doesn't want a hesped, so you're not mechuyif to give, deliver a hesped. But we shouldn't think, some people think you only show kovad amesim, you don't show kovad achayim. No, that's not true. Kovad achayim is more chomer than kovad amesim. The Gemara has a suffix about the kvura. The original pasuk "Kovatik Berena Bayamahu Kikiron Salakim Tavloi" only appears in Chumash in connection with Harugi Bezin. Only has by Harugi Bezin. That's where the Rambam has it. The Rambam has Hilchas Avel after Hilchas Sanhedrin. Why? So he explains why in the beginning of Hilchas Avel, before he begins Halacha Aleph in the preamble to Hilchas Avelus, he writes, and he's putting Hilchas Avelus here because the original pasuk of Avelus is by the mitzvah of Kvura. And the mitzvah Kfur and Chumash only says by Haruge Bezin. So in Hilchas Sanhedrin, he talks about Mises Bezin, talks a lot. A big chunk of Hilchas Sanhedrin is Mises Bezin. So the next thing after Mises Bezin is the Kfur of Haruge Bezin, and Hilchas Avelus in connection with the Haruge Bezin. And that's why he writes all the dinam of Kfur and all the dinam of Avelus over there. So the Gemara has the Shaila, what about Shar Meisim? A normal person dies, not from the Haruge Bezin. As man said, we don't have any Haruge Bezin. Is there a mitzvah of Kfur or not? So the Gemara quotes two brises that are practically word for word exactly the same, and the Lecha Mishnah on the bottom of the Rambam points out that the only difference between the version of the two brises is whether it's remez lekvura min haTorah minayin, or it's minayin lekvura min haTorah. So if the reading, the one brise says remez lekvura min haTorah minayin, so usually remez means the Rabbanon. Once in a long while you have a remez. The Gemara we use the expression remez and it means a din daraisa, but most of the time the word remez means mid rabbanon. Take for example the first daf in Makkos. Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvos points this out. That in the first daf in Makkos, the Gemara says remez le'edim zayimim shalokim in atar minay. If the edim zayimim were caught lying about a case of ben grusha b'chalutza or golus or kofer or eved ivri, so in all those cases you give them malchus. So we assume that that Malkus is Menatar. And the Gemara uses the Lashon, Remez Leidim Zemim Shalok Menatar Minayin. But they say Shalok Menatar Minayin. So the Ramban says that's an exception to the rule. The Gemara uses the word Remez, and it's a Din Deraisa. But usually the word Remez means a Din Derabbanon. So here in Sanhedrin, around Afmem, Zayinam and Beis, the Gemara has two Braises, one next to the other, that are practically word for word the same. The only difference is one starts off, Remez Lekvura Menatar Minayin, by Shar Mesim. The other Brisa says, Minayin the Kvura Menatar. So the Lecha Mishnah points out in the bottom of the Rambam that it seems that that's the machloikis between the two Brises, where the Kvura B'Shar Mesim is the Raisa the Rabban. Kvura by Harugi Bezdin is for sure the Raisa. Kvura by Shar Mesim is a machloikis. The Rambam assumes that is the Raisa. Rav Moshe has a tshuva. He says, he quotes this Lecha Mishnah, and he says, the Rambam assumes that Kvura is a mitzvah Menatar. So the Gemara learns it out from the fact that it says Kovatik Berena by Yomahu, Kovatik Berena, the Kefaloshin. So it's Marbe, even one who didn't die, Ayudei Mrs. Bezna. The Parsha begins, Chiyabish, Chet Mishpat Mavis, Vumas, Vasalisa Salates, and Solon the Vela Salates, Kovatik Berena by Yomahu. So it starts off, Chiyabish, Chet Mishpat Mavis, Vumas, starts off on Mrs. Bezma, because it says Kefaloshin, Kavatik Berena, so it's Marbi even Amesal Mitos, another person who dies. It wasn't killed by Bez. So the Gemara asks, why do you have to learn that from a Kepa Lashon Kavatik Berena? Learn out over here. The Chumash records the story that Sari Mena died and Avram Avinu buried her. So why was it recorded in the Chumash? Isn't it to indicate that there is a mitzvah of Kvura? Otherwise, why does the Chumash record it? So the Gemara says, not necessarily. Maybe the Pasuk is just saying that was Minhaga B'Alma. Maybe that was the Minig. So what does that mean? So the Chumash is recording that Avram Avinu followed the Minig. So the Acharonim say, no, whatever is the Minig, you're mechuyev to do mitam kavod abrius. So maybe if the Minig changes, if the Minig was in the days of Avram Avinu that they bury Mesim, so the Minig is mechayev. Habal chayev b'kavod ishtoi. Habal chayev b'kavod ishtoi has to be mechabda while she's alive, and after she dies, if the minhag hamakom is that you bury, the minhag hamakom is that you deliver a hesped, so he has to live up to the minhag hamakom, because that's a definition of kavod. Kavod is whatever is expected according to the society. But if the minhag will change, and the minhag will become that they'll burn bodies, and they'll make it into ashes, and they spread the ashes in a river, so maybe then the minhag requires that you should do that, whatever is expected you should do. So that's why the Gemara says, no, we have to have a different pasuk, Kavdik Verenu, that there's a Chayvas Kvura. It's not just a function of the Minig. But mitam this pasuk, one might have thought that maybe Avraham Avinu just did it because that was the Minig. One is Mukhayif to follow the Minig in order to show Kavod. Kavod always depends on what the Minig Amakam is.
Is cremating just in... Are you just going over on that same of Kvura, if you're seeing the Raisa, or is it also allowed in...
I don't think it's allowed. It's the mitzvah saseh of kvura. Yeah. Kavod ames. Right. Right. That's true. Yeah. Sometimes it's hard to tell whether the Gemara meant a drasha gemura or an asmak, like we had the first line in Ketzim Levarchim. But Kiva learns that from the pasuk, you have to recite Birchas Hanenin. So Tosis points out that the Tchilas Hasugi, they thought that he really meant a drasha gemura, the Raisa. Then when you get 40 lines later, it's obvious that he only meant an asmak, that he didn't mean a drasha gemura. Yeah, sometimes it's hard to tell. They offer Avraham Avinu, they respected him as a holy clergyman, they see Elikim, they had a different religion, but they respected him as a man of God, and they said, we think that you should bury your wife in one of the fancier cemeteries, and he says he can't, he has to bury the Kevi Yisrael in different cemeteries. So last Shabbos we were speaking about this, I think by Shalom Shudas, that Avraham Avinu says, Ger b'toshav anochi yimachim. So ger v'toshav are contradiction in terms. Toshav means that he's here kavu, and ger means that he's only here temporarily. So Avraham Avinu is really saying that the Jews in this world throughout all the generations, but ger v'toshav. We're toshav in the sense, we're here like everybody else, and we got to work on curing cancer, and taking care of poverty, and helping all the mishugoyim, and helping all the sick people, and straightening out the whole world, the economy, and so on. But then, in another sense, we're ger. We have no shaykhis but the rest of the world. We have a whole different interest. We have a different list of a different hierarchy of values. A lot of times, we have things that we consider values that the Ummah Zolim do not consider values. So the Jews have lead a totally different style of living. We lead a different life, and we die differently. We're buried differently. So Avraham Avinu says he has to have a different cemetery. The Jews can't be buried together with the Ummah Zolim. It's a different style of living. Everything is in constant different. That's why the Chazal have one interpretation. Avraham Avinu is referred to as Avraham Ho'ivri. What do you mean Ho'ivri? So the Medrash has two pshatim. Eva HaNohar came from the other side of the river. And the other pshat, Rashi quotes the two pshat. The other pshat is Kol Alam Kulam Me'eva. Zebuhu Me'eva Acher. He's against the whole world. Avraham Avinu, the whole world is going one way, and he's going a different way. He's swimming upstream. Instead of swimming downstream, the Jews always swim upstream. They do different from everybody else. That's what he says. Ger v'toshav anochi. I'm in one sense, yeah, I'm a toshav. I lead a life together with you, and I worked with you on a lot of things. But I'm a ger. I can't bury my wife over here. So Rav Soloveitchik told the story about one of the Rothschilds who died in France in the '60s or the '70s. I forgot already when the story was. So he left instructions that if he dies, he wanted to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. So at that time, De Gaulle was the president. So he got angry. So he said, what do you mean? The man was born in France. He was educated in France, made all his money in France. He died in France. I'm not going to let him be buried in Israel. He's going to be buried in France. He was very upset. So I think there was, I forgot already all the details, there was some kind of war going on in Eretz Yisrael at that time, or soon after. And there was an unscheduled El Al flight that landed in Paris. So somehow the family succeeded in smuggling the body onto the plane and having him buried in Eretz Yisrael against the Gaulle's wishes. The man said this happened, the original Rothschild was a religious balabas. This fellow Rothschild probably was not a Shamish Shabbos. He did not lead the life of a religious Jew, but he knew he was supposed to lead a different life. He felt he's a ger, and he felt that he's not supposed to be buried. He may have been intermarried also. I don't remember. Some of them are intermarried, unfortunately. But he realized that he should have led a different style of life, and he should be buried differently. So that's why he felt he wants to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. It has to be a different style of living. Pasuk uses the expression "Vayakam Avraham Al Penei Meiso." Vaydaber Al Penei Ches Leimor. What do you mean, Vayakam? He's leaning on top of the mace. So the Gemara has this lashon, the beginning of the third parak in Brachos, is Misha Meisa Muta Lefanov. So the Gemara says it's an expression. Misha Meisa Muta Lefanov means it's Mutal Olav Lekavroy. It doesn't necessarily mean that the mace is under his nose. Misha Meisa Muta Lefanov is not allowed to eat Pasuk V'yayin. Is ain't a mace of a yochel. He's not allowed to say kriyashman. Not allowed to put on tefillin. Asa b'chol ha-mitzvahs amuris b'ter. He's potter and asa to fulfill any mitzvahs in the turf. So it doesn't necessarily mean mace muta lefonim. The Gemara says if it's muta all of lekavroi, it's his responsibility to bury the mace. He's one of the relatives. Then it's considered condition mace muta lefonim dami. The Gemara quotes this pasuk that that's where the expression comes from. Vayakam Avraham yal penei meso. It's not to be taken necessarily literally that he was leaning over the mace. It means it was there, they were all together. The mace was somewhere else. And it was mutal olav lekavroi, so he negotiated about the cemetery. He insisted on paying, on buying a plot. Why did he insist on buying? So the Gemara in Yesh Neuchlin has an expression that it's a genai letzadik sheyakova bekev sheyna shalom. The Gemara talks about habal yerush esishtoi. The Gemara quotes Psukim from Divrayomim and from Shoftim about how can it be someone from one Shevet got a chelik and another Shevet, so it must be that he married a girl from the other Shevet and the wife died first and he got the Yerusha. How do you know? The Gemara says maybe his mother, maybe his parents. How do you know that? How can you prove from there that the husband Yarshin's the wife? Maybe the husband does not Yarshin his wife. Maybe the children Yarshin the wife. And the mother was from one Shevet and the son, the mother and the father were from two different Shvatim. So the son has the same Shevet as the father. When the mother died, the son got the Yerusha. That's how the Gemara is trying to figure out how can you have Psukim in Nevi'im and Ksuvim that talk about a person from one Shevet having a share in a Nachla from another Shevet. Gemara says, who says that the husband Yarshin? Maybe the son Yarshin. So the Gemara quotes a different person. Gemara is working there. So then in the middle of that discussion, how can you tell from Nevi'im and Ksuvim that Abal Yerusha is Ishtoi? So the Gemara points out, wait a minute, but if this Yerusha, what's the din Habal Yerusha Sishta? Does it go back when it comes Yovel? Or do you say, no, it's full-fledged Yerusha. Yerusha doesn't go back to Yovel. But if you consider it like Mekach, then it goes back to Yovel. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? A person is going to be buried in a plot that belongs to him, and then it's going to go back to Yovel. The plot is going to belong to someone else. The Gemara formulates an expression, that's terrible. Nimtza tzadik kova bekevish ena shalom. It'll turn out that the tzadik will be buried after it's going to go back to Yovel. It'll turn out that the tzadik is buried in a plot of land that doesn't belong to him, and that's considered a tragedy. So some say that that's what's going on over here, that Avraham Avinu insisted on buying the Maros HaMachpelo, that it should be some kind of hargosh, it should be a tzadik kova bekevish ena shalom. They tell such a story about I think after the Stipler passed away over 20 years ago, 25 years ago. I remember I was in Eretz Yisrael that summer. I was at the funeral. So after he died, I think they say that his son had a dream, that they were complaining something. So he found out that they never paid the Chevra Kadisha for the plot. Because when the Stipler died, so they took care of the Kfura, and they didn't ask for any money. So when he paid for the plot, and so then he had a dream that everything straightened out, that his father was happier. They still tell us stories about other tzaddikim also, that if they didn't pay for the plot, then it's a problem. Nimtza tzaddikov ha-bekevesh en ha-shalon. Achrenim talk about that. Others have a different suggestion over here, that in the days of the Ovois, only those parts of Eretz Yisrael that were purchased had some kind of a Kedusha. The real Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael only began after the Sheva Shekovsha, Sheva Shechilku, centuries later, when Yeshua ben Nun conquered Eretz Yisrael. So it took 7 years to conquer the territory, and it took 7 years to divide it. So after the Gemar HaKibush, that was Hestis, the Chalukah L'Shvatim, Chalukah L'Mishpachas, and Chalukah L'Yechidim, so then Eretz Yisrael had the Kedusha. In the days of the Yovas, Eretz Yisrael belonged to Avraham Avinu from the time that he walked around the borders. When he walked around, he was kaina, but it didn't have kedusha yet. So some of them are far from Avachumish. Ramban has this, that the areas that he paid for, it already belonged to him. But the areas that he paid for, those were endowed with kedusha. What shach to pay? If already, Baruch Shalom already gave him the kinyan. So what's being added by paying? It's very unclear. That's why in Parshas Vayechi, when Yaakov Avinu is about to die, so he asks that Yosef should come. And he tells Yosef, you know, when your mother died, Meisalim, Rachel Baderach, Bodke Baseretz, and I buried her there, and Rashi quotes the Medrash, and I didn't bother to bring her into Eretz Yisrael. She shouldn't have any tarumas on me. Why am I asking you to schlep my body from Mitzrayim to Moris HaMachpelah, and your mother died just a couple of miles away? I didn't bother to take her. I buried her in Chutzlortz. So Yaakov Avinu farenfes himself, and he says, it was all api adibu. What can I do? Rabbanu Shalom told me, and it's going to be as Aleim HaDerach, so when the Jews will go into Golus after the Churban Bayis Rishon, they'll be able to be mispala there. So he has to farem for himself to his son Yosef. So the Mefarshim ask over there, the Ramban asks, what do you mean? I buried her in Chutz La'aretz. What, Kever Rochel is in Chutz La'aretz? Kever Rochel is in the middle of Eretz Yisrael. Wherever it is, wherever it's supposed to be. But it's in the middle of Eretz Yisrael. What kind of a lashon? So that's the Ramban writes such a lashon, that in the days of the Ovis, only those areas that they paid for were later on Yankov bought Shechem, Ikenes Chelkas Hasada, and here Avraham Avinu paid for the Moris HaMachpelah. The areas that they paid for, those had Kedusha, some kind of Kedusha. The areas that they didn't pay for were in a certain sense considered Chutz La'aretz. So maybe that's why he paid for it, that he wanted it to be buried in Eretz Yisrael, to have the Chshivas of being buried in Eretz Yisrael. In the first daf in Kiddushin, the Gemara says that Kiddushin, the Rambam quotes his Gemara, Kiddushin is mefurish in the pasuk, kechishi shabal. The Kiddushin star is a hekish, v'yotza v'hoisa, so that's also considered Torah Shebichsav. In Kiddushin Kesef, the Rambam writes is Dibre Soifim, is Torah Shebal Peh. How's it learned that? So it's learned that kicha, kicha misdei Ephraim. So Rabbi Hirsch writes in one of his Svarim in Chorev, he writes that the Maskilim always used to make fun of the rabbis, that you go marry a girl, it's like the farmer buying a horse, or it's like somebody buying real estate. Kicha, kicha, Mr. Ephraim. Get married to a girl, there's learned off from buying real estate. That's what it's all about. So he says, no, they misunderstood. He doesn't quote all the sources, but it goes as follows in Chayshim Mishma, Simen Kuf Tzadik, it talks about the Kinyan Karkai de Kesef. So there's a machlek zeh between the Sma and the Taz. How does Kinyan Kesef work? So the Sma says that Kinyan Kesef means I pay for the real estate. The real estate is worth $3 million. So I pay by check, by cash, whatever. I pay for the real estate. But the Brisa says Karkas Niknas Bepruta B'Shavah Pruta, but the real estate is worth $3 million. So the answer, the Sma claims the answer is you're only kind of Bepruta if you pay the Pruta for the Meha Mekach and then Zaka follow B'Mulva. I say the rest of the $3 million minus one Pruta, Ayoyo is a Halvor. I don't owe you as the Meha Mekach. The din is that if you buy something and you never pay for it, I buy something that belongs to me, that's only halal tanai that I ultimately pay for it. I buy a lulav and an esri. And I didn't pay today. I make a kinyan, I bought kinyan chotzer, I take it in my car, I'm cutting the kinyan chotzer, and then I use it. And I tell the merchant, I'll pay after yontif. So if I never pay him, so the din is that it's a glory milsim afir never belonged to me. If I buy karka, metalkum, I never pay for it. So the din is that you're not kinyan. You're kinyan now, Allah Tanai, that ultimately you're going to pay. If you never pay, it's not, but that's only if you didn't pay the demand mecca. What if I paid him, let's say, the real estate is worth $3 million, and I give him half of the money, I give him one pruta, And I say I want to be zaykif all I bimilva. The remaining money that I owe you for the mea mekach should no longer be considered a chiyuv b'toras mea mekach. Should be considered a chiyuv b'toras chov stam. So the Mishnais have such a thing, a concept of zakah all of bimilva. So then, even if I never pay later on, I say I was kind of now. Because the payment is no longer considered the Torah's Mea Mekah. The payment that I owe is a Chov Stam. Mishnais have Legabi Shmita, Legabi Ribbis, Gershin, it's got different cases where it's relevant that you make a Zekif Hasmam. So the Sma writes such a Chiddush that the Din in the Braisa that says that a Karka is Niknis Bipruto is only if you paid the full Mea Mekah, or if you paid a Pruto for a, the whole Karka is only, he's only charging a Pruto, or if he's charging $5 million, so that the pruta goes towards the mea mekach, and the rest of the money that I owe, the 4,999,000, etc., etc., is od b'taras chov. You only kind of karka b'kesef if you pay the mea mekach. So the taz is masig on that sma. Sma came first. The taz is masig on the sma. He says it doesn't make any sense. If karka is niknas b'kesef means that you're paying the mea mekach, so how in the world can the rabbis learn kicha Mr. Ephron? That a man can be mikdash and nisha b'kesef, he's not paying the mea mekach how much the girl is worth. He gives her a ring, the girl is worth $200. That's all she's worth. Either she's priceless or she's worthless, but she's not worth $200. That can't be the demand. What the rest is zokav olav and milva. It doesn't make any sense. So the Taz says, you see from the kicha gzereshova, that it's just a symbolic act of kinyan. It's not that the money that you give is b'toras the mea mekach. It doesn't have to be b'toras mea mekach at all. That's what Rabbi Hirsch assumes. He says the maskilim misunderstood the nature of kinya karka. From the fact that you can derive kiddushe kesef from kinya karka shows that the Taz is right, that kinya karka is just a symbolic act of kinya. Why did the rabbis choose, and then Rabbi Hirsch had zan al derech hadrash, why did the rabbis choose to learn kicha kicha mistei Ephron? Is that buying a cemetery plot? Couldn't they pick anything better? They could have learned the gzereshova somewhere else. So he says no. The rabbis wanted to show that the husband should respect, he should love his wife and respect his wife so much, he should be prepared to spend arba meyo shekel kesef aver la'asecha, even after she dies. While she's alive, for sure, mechab de yosem igufoy. He has to buy her clothing and spend money, whatever, to be mechabed his wife, if she goes into clothing. Some women enjoy books, some women enjoy education, so whatever, and other women enjoy fur coats and diamond rings and jewelry, so whatever would please the wife, said the husband, that's mechabda. Mechabda doesn't just mean to hold the door. Mechabda means to spend money. Mechabda means to spend money on the wife, if he can afford it. If he can't afford it, nish. But if he can afford it, he's mechuyiv to. Then the Gemara has a din. The Gemara learns that from a pasuk. Let's say he's a wealthy man, no question of money, he can afford it. But his parents were also wealthy, but they led a very simple style of living. But his in-laws, the girl was brought up in her. The in-laws, they go to Eretz Yisrael for all Shabbos Shagolim, and they go in the summertime, they go to Acapulco, whatever. They travel all over the world, go to Switzerland. They're always traveling around. And the wife gets married, and she's used to living, that kind of thing. If the husband can't afford it, he can't afford it. There's nothing to discuss. If he can't afford it, so the Gemara learns that from a pasuk, then oila ima ve'ena yoredes imo. If she was brought up in a family where they had a low style of living, and the husband has a higher style of living, so she can demand a higher style of living. She doesn't go down. She doesn't go down. If her parents had the higher standard of living, and his family had a low standard of living, so she always gets the best of the both worlds, provided the husband can afford it. Sometimes that causes big friction in families. That's one of the big sources of friction in a marriage, that the husband's about how much money the wife is spending. The two major causes are in-laws giving aitzes and money, spending money. Rabbi Soloveitchik used to tell over the story that once a couple came to him, they didn't have shalom bais, and they were telling over the whole problem. So the Rav realized that the boy's mother is sticking in her 2 cents too much. So he asked her to come. So he called her up on the phone, he asked Mrs. Weiss, she'd come, he wants to speak to her. So he tells you, Mrs. Weiss, the children are happily married. She shouldn't give any advice. If you'll stop giving advice, they'll have a happier marriage. So she said to him, Rabbi Soloveitchik, wer gibt advice? Ich gib nur Eitzes. No, he said in Yiddish. He said, sie soll nicht geben kein Eitzes. He said to her, sie soll nicht geben kein Eitzes. So she said back, who's giving Eitzes? I'm only giving advice. That's a problem. when the parents give advice. The advice is probably intelligent advice, probably smarter to do what the parents tell than what the children think. But that's it. Children don't like, they want to make their own mistakes in life. They don't want to learn from the mistakes of the parents. So if you give advice to children, sometimes it's disruptive in their marriage. That's what he spoke about last night. That a lot of times the parents know better than the children what shidduch they should go for. So at least the parents have an obligation to bring it to the attention of the children. So strictly speaking, there's no din of kibbutz av on shidduchim. But the seichel dictates that the children should listen to the eitzot that the parents give, because they have much more experience in life. Yeah.
Often, like they have sort of about children, for example. So the parents are not saying, "I'm not going to
prom." Right, right. That's a different story. Parents have a totally different system of values, and then the advice often will not be meaningful. But if one is brought up in a regular Orthodox home, and the parents know what the children need. A lot of times when a boy's going out on dates, his friends are going to give him advice. The advice that the friends give is always from their perspective. So some of the boys are only looking for money. So a boy goes out with a very wealthy girl, so the other friends are going to say, "Grab it, go for the girl." Why should he go for the girl? Because they would run for that girl, because the girl is very wealthy. But this boy is not necessarily looking for wealth. He's looking for Yirah Shamayim or something. So a lot of times your friend's advice is not significant at all. I remember there was one boy in the yeshiva. He had a shot. He came to me with a shot. He called the girl for a date, and then they made up a date when they're going to go out. And then his friends heard that he's going with that girl. They said, "That's ridiculous, such a waste of time. The girl is not for you." So he wants to know, is he allowed to call the girl and cancel the dates, call in sick, say that he doesn't feel well, and forget about calling again a second time? Is that permissible, Tobai? So I said to him, why should you believe your friends just because they give you a daya? They think the girl's not for you. Maybe they're talking from their perspective. Maybe the girl is for you. So he went out with the girl and he got married to her. Everyone has a different perspective in life. Everyone's looking for something else in marriage. So just because the friends tell me it's a gewaldige shidduch or an awful shidduch, that's from their perspective it's awful. It could be from my perspective it's wonderful. Avraham Avinu realized that has to get a shidduch for Yitzchak, and he's not allowed to let Yitzchak leave Eretz Yisrael. Yitzchak was offered as a korban, and in every korban there's a mokum and there's a zman. So if the korban goes chutzlim komo, it becomes nifsal b'yotze. Chutzl zmanai is nifsal b'lino. Noisar, chutzlim komo is nifsal b'yotze. So usually by korbanos, the psul of yotze only applies after shchita. Shchita is the first avoda. Before shchita, the animal can roam around wherever. You can't do the shchita chutz la'azara. Shachar is ben ha'bakar lefnei Hashem. Shchita has to be in the azara. Then if you take the basar out of the azara or out of Yerushalayim, depending whether it's kachin kalim or kachin kachin, then it'll be nifsal b'yotze. What's with Yitzchak? There never was a shchita on Yitzchak. So what do you mean there's nifsal b'yotze? Not allowed to take him chutz l'eretz Yisrael. So apparently, when Avraham Avinu said, he saw when Avraham Avinu saw the ayil nechaz basvach bekarnov, and he was makriv the ayil tachtov. So tachtov means that the shchita of the ayil was considered as if he did a shchita on his son Yitzchak. How does the pasuk say? Instead of his son. So there's such a medrash when he did the shechita on the ayil, he said this should be considered as if I did a shechita on my son. So that's apparently what this medrash assumes. That Yitzchak Avinu was an oilot tmimo, and the shechita done on the ayil is considered as if the shechita affected Yitzchak. So the korban after shechita cannot be yotze chutz l'mkama. What is the makam? So you can't say the makam is Yerushalayim, the makam is Azara. There was no Azara, there was no Yerushalayim. So the makom is Eretz Yisrael. That's why he's not allowed to leave. So Avraham Avinu has a dilemma here. He said he feels that for the future of Klal Yisrael, he can't marry one of the girls from Eretz Canaan, even one of the Hasidim of Avraham Avinu. He had many followers, many people converted. he feels he has to marry a girl from his family, but he's not allowed to let him go meet the girls. In Yiddish, the expression, Vikum te katsi bedevasim. How is he going to marry the girl? So he has no choice. He has to send Eliezer to go find the shidduch for Yitzchak. Under normal conditions, Yitzchak goes to find the shidduch himself. Why should you rely on your friends? The friends have a different... So it makes him square on the Sefer Torah. It makes him swear Benikitas didn't have a Sefer Torah. So the only chefetz shal mitzvah he had was the bris milah. So he says, Simna yorcha tachas irechi. One should realize this is absolutely serious for the future of the whole Klal Yisrael. You have to make sure that my son... that you get the right shidduch for my son, because it's nagir to the whole osid of Klal Yisrael. The Rebbeinu Shalom told Avraham Avinu, "Kid Yitzchak kol lachazera," that Yitzchak is going to have descendants. Don't worry, it's not going to be Yishmael; it's going to be Yitzchak. And later in the parsha, it says that he sends away the bnei apilakshim, nasan Avraham atonas vayishalchem al pnei Yitzchak. He sends away the bnei apilakshim, and it makes it clear that it's not Yishmael. The Arabs claim that they're also descendants from Avraham Avinu, and they're entitled to Eretz Yisrael. They're not entitled. The Rebbeinu Shalom said that Eretz belongs to Zer Avraham, and the Zer Avraham is not the same as the Ben Avraham. He explained, Taisis Nivam says, Zer means those children who carry over the traditions. A Ben means a biological child, and a Zer means, even Bnei Bonim are included in Zera. Zera means like a seed. If you have a seed from an apple, you plant it, you're going to have an apple tree. The seed from that apple tree is going to plant it and make another apple tree. So the Zera means the same thing. An apple, an apple, an apple, an apple. Exactly the same. Yishmael was not an apple. Yishmael was a different thing. It wasn't a rotten apple. He was a ganzen, a different thing. It was a potato. It was an orange. It wasn't the Zera Avram. That's what Rabbanu Shalom said. Ki b'Yitzchak yikor lecho Zera. Only Yitzchak is the Zera. So at the end of Chayisar, Avraham Avinu demonstrates that. He makes it very clear that it's only Yitzchak is going to get Eretz Yisrael, not Yishmael, and not the Bnei Apilakshim, it's only Yitzchak. So he already knew that Rebbeinu Shalom gave him a haftocha that B'Yitzchak Yikor L'Chazera, the Jewish nation is going to develop from Yitzchak. He knows he's going to get married, he knows he's going to have children, but he can't send Yitzchak to Chutz L'Eretz, he's already an Oyla Tmima. And he can't let him marry a girl from Bnei Kenan, it's just not going to work. So this is a very crucial thing. So he makes Eliezer swear, B'Nikitas Chayfetz, that he's going to get in the right course. So then Eliezer asks, what am I going to do? What do I do if the girl doesn't want to come to Eretz Yisrael? Should I let Yitzchak go to Chutz Laretz? Or should I let him marry a girl from Eretz Kenan? Avraham Avinu insists Yitzchak can't go to Chutz Laretz, and he can't marry a girl from Eretz Kenan. So he said, but what's going to be if the girl doesn't want to come? So what should I do then? Should I let him marry one of the... one of the Bnei Kenan who converted, or should I let him go? So Avraham Avinu says, it's not going to happen. The Rebbeinu Shalom promised me, that's what he answers him. He says, have a haftach of Yishma. Ulai l'sov v'yishol alecha sacharayel ha'aretz ha'zor, say, hoshav hoshav is bincha ha'aretz ha'sher yuktsas v'nisham. Should I let him go there, or should I let him marry a girl from Bnei Kenan? So he says, don't worry, it's not going to happen. Hashem Eloki Hashemayim Shevachachan Beisad Meiratzah. He's promised Nishbali Lemer Azar Chayetan Es Haratzah. So Yishlach Malach Alafanecha. Elav Kach Deisha Livnim Yisham. It's just not going to happen. The Rebbeinu Shalom told me I have to follow the dinim. The dinim is not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. The dinim is he has to marry a girl from my family. If you follow the dinim, it's going to work. You don't have to worry. We're always worried. What's going to be if this is going to happen? So am I allowed to violate this din? Shas Atchak. So he says we have a haftacha. It is going to work. You don't have to worry about it. And it did work. The girl came to Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara learns out in this pasuk, the institution, that when you have a Shavuos HaDayonim, you have to have them swear b'nikitas chayv. Shavuos HaDayonim is a Shavuos Darais and Dini Mamnas, like a Moedim Mitzvahs, a Shavuos Eidecha, a Shavuos HaShomer. You have to hold the Sefer Torah. That's why they have in court, when they have witnesses testify, so they put your hand on a Bible and you say, swear to tell the truth, nothing but the truth. So that's called the Nikitas Chetet. Nikitas Chetet doesn't necessarily mean you hold the Sefer Torah like the Chazan holds when they take out Hoitzoa from Sheni Bechamishi. This is also Nikitas Chetet. You put your hand on a Sefer Torah, it's also Nikitas Chetet. Al Pidin, the Tosis shows in the beginning of the second parak in Kiddushin, that an aid who has to swear that he's telling the truth, nothing but the truth, to help them, the Lord, so such an aid is pasulaitis. An aid who's Torah Shavua is pasulaitis. There is no such thing that an aid has to swear. Sometimes the Baldin has to swear, but the aid is either believed on his own or he's not believed at all. He cannot be believed only with Shavua. But there was such a minig. In Shulchan Aruch, they quote the Rif, introduced such a minig. Rif lived in North Africa, lived in Fez in Morocco. The Rif was a Moroccan. So, and his Bezdin, that place called Rabbi Yitzchak Al-Fazi, he lived in Fez. So he instituted such a minig that whenever Edom testify in a Bezdin, they should put their hand on a Sefer Torah and swear ben Akitas Chebes that they're telling the truth. So that's a minig that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. But the din only requires that by Shvuah Sadayon, when the Bezdin is Mashbiya Shvuah, by the Mitzas, Shvuah Sadechod, so he has to hold on to a Sefer Torah. So how can you learn that out over here? What has this got to do with the Shvuah Sadayon? How are they learning out from this parsha? So the pashtus probably is, I think Rav Soloveitchik probably said that, the pashtus probably is, the Gemara is just learning out from the parsha that Al Pidin, there are two levels of a Shvuah. There's a Shvuah with an Akitas Chayfetz, that's a higher level, more serious Shvuah. Then there's a Shvuah B'li Akitas Chayfetz, that's a lower level of Shvuah, it's also valid. So you see that Avram Avinu wanted to impress upon Eliezer how important he considers this mission. He feels that this is crucial for the future of Klal Yisrael. If Yitzchak is going to marry, the wrong girl is going to marry one of the Giyuris, Meretz Canaan, it's not going to be good for the future of Klal Yisrael. So he must marry someone from his family back in Choron. So he wanted to make him swear the highest form of Shua Pasma, highest form of Shua possible, is the Shua Benekitas Chayfetz. That's all you learn from the parsha. So then the Tanaim understood when Bezdin is Mashbiya, Shvuas Hadayonim, Amoidim Mikzas, Shvuas Eidechot, Asvaran Asenes, they should require also, if there are two forms of Shvua, higher level and a lower level, Seichel dictates that they should require the higher level of a Shvua. So that's what the Gemara is learning at. You just learn out that it's a different Chalashem Shvua, if it's a Shvua ben Akitas Chayfetz. The Ran in the Dharm quotes from the Chuvas Agoinim that they used to have Aseres Hadibros. Some people go with a locket on their neck, on a necklace, and it has Aseres Hadibros written inside. So the Pashta says you're not allowed to do that. The Gemara says you're not permitted to write less than a Sefer Shomer. Not allowed to write just a Parsha. L'Hislamed is a Machlekes in the Gemara, Machlekes in Yeridah. What about little children? You're going to make the children carry a whole Chumash Bereshis when they come to school? Maybe it could be Mako. They're learning Lech Lecha, they're learning Chayisara. Maybe you can have a printout of Chayisara. For educational purposes, maybe we would be makel that you can print less than the Sefer Shom. So that's we're makel on that today. But Meikar Adin, the Gemara says you're not allowed to write less than the Sefer Shom. So that's a shot. Is it permissible to write Aseres Hadibros? Because the Rebbeinu Shlomo himself engraved the Aseres Hadibros on the Shtei Luchos Eidos. That was written separately, like Tefillin and Mezuzah. You're allowed to write. That's a parsha. The Halacha says you have to write Tefillin and Mezuzah.
So in Shul's, when they had outside the Shul, it's like, I don't know if they don't write the full
two words, two words.
Sometimes it's even possible to know what's going on. It's just, I know
Pesach.
Is that for sure not good?
Yeah, that's not right. Some of the Hungarian Rabbanim write that you're not allowed to have Aseres Hadibros in Shul, because the Gemara says in Brachas, in the end of the first parak, that there was a time historically that they used to recite Aseres Hadibros in the davening at the end of Shacharis. And then it misled a lot of people. There were people who thought that that's all. They'd ask a lot of balabat, how many mitzvahs are there? So a lot of people think there are 10 mitzvahs. You tell them there's 613. No, there are 10 commandments. Only 10 mitzvahs. There aren't 613. They don't realize. So the Gemara says, "M'tnei tarumis haminim," that the minim shouldn't think that only Aseres Hadibros is min hashamayim and the rest is the Rabbanon. Moshe Rabbeinu made it up himself. So they discontinued that practice of reciting Aseres Hadibros at the end of the davening. So some of the Hungarian Rabbonim claim that historically, this is a historical question, having Aseres Hadibros on the Paroiches or on top of the Aron Kodesh was introduced by the Reform and by the modern Orthodox in Hungary, who were tending a little bit towards Reform. And it's not right. If you have Aseres Hadibros in Shul, it's as if you're advertising that those Aseres Hadibros are more important than everything else, and it's not so. Others say it's just historically incorrect that there are shuls from 500 years ago before the Reform movement that have Aseres Hadibros on. How can you say that it was started by the Reform?
What was the big interest of
Aharon's
family?
That's the question. His family were Rabbi Avodah Zarah, yeah. Why does he want Dafka? The girl has to be from his family. He had very fine girls who were Balas Tshuva, who were who are Giyuris. So shouldn't it be better to marry one of his Talmidos from Eretz Yisrael? So that's what the Ran explains in the Rosh Hashanah. He has a long Arichis. He says that the Midas go over in the genes. So he says that Avram Avinu's family were fine Bali Midas. They were Edla people. And the people in Eretz Canaan had miserable Midas. Even though he had converted many of them, he had a lot of followers, a lot of Hasidim and Chasidatskis. He had a lot of women who converted also. But it's hard to change the Midas. So he said it's easier to change the Deis. So that's why Avram Avinu felt that it's absolutely necessary. He has to marry a girl who has the proper Midas. And then the Deis will work with, will straighten out the Deis already. That's what he claims.
Very often, like when you go on Shabbaton with the kids on there, they would publish just the Parsha or the Shabbos.
Right.
According to Rosh Hashanah, saying now, it seems like it.
It is a shayla. Yeruday. It says you're not allowed to unless lehislamei. What does it mean lehislamei? It's for learning purposes. I mean, if the organization who's sponsoring this Shabbaton simply doesn't have access to 300 chumashim, or it'll be too difficult to have so many other things to schlep, it'll be too difficult to schlep so many chumashim, and it's much easier for them to bring a printout, 300 copies of Parshas Chayisara. So then they make them. Yeah. That's what everybody does when they do a Shabbaton, so they make a print out of the parsha. So the mekel, because the Gemara has lehislamed for learning purposes in the machlekes, and it's a machlekes in Yeriday, and it says the meaning is lehakel, that for learning purposes we are mekel to have less than a sefer shom. So the Ran and the Dorin quotes from the Goinim that they used to have aseres adibus written separately, the whole aseres adibus, taka, to write just the lasirtoch, lasinof, lasignoif. And you don't have all the rest, so that's less than the Sefer Shalom, less than all Aseres HaDibros. But if you write the whole Aseres HaDibros, apparently they felt that was permissible. It's like writing Tefillin and Mezuzah, that those parshas are neat and the Hikasev separately. So they had Aseres HaDibros, and they used to, the people would take a Shavua, they would hold on to their locket, or they would hold on to Aseres HaDibros, hold on to the Aseres HaDibros. Some of the Svardim have a parsha of Parshas HaKetores. That in Kabbalah, some Kabbalah Svarim write that if you recite Parshas HaKetores, it says Gula for Ashiris. The Gemara says the coin who's makta the Ketores, Isim Ketore Biapecha Baruch Hashem Chelo. The coin who does the HaKetores, it says Gula for Ashiris. So the Mishnah says in Yume, they would always see to it to spread the wealth, that they wouldn't give a coin a second chance to be makta Ketores. When they had the lottery, who has the schus to do this Avoida? So when it came to HaKetores, they would say Chadoshim HaKetores Bovah Hafisim. We only allow those who never had a chance before in order to spread the wealth around. So the Mekubalim say not only Haktaras Haktaras, and the Shalma Farm so saying, if you talk about the Haktaras Haktaras, also the school of Hashiris. So then a lot of these, a lot of the wealthy Svardim, so they'll write the whole Parshas Haktaras on cloth. So that's a serious question. How are you allowed to do that? That's, the Gemara says you're not allowed to write less than a Sefer Shalom. So what's the hat? I don't know. They quote the Chazanish, said it's Mutter. I don't know. It says in the Gemara that it's awesome. How the Chazanish say it's mutter? I don't know. The other Svarim say you can't trust anything that people say unless you heard it yourself in the Chazanish. They say a lot of things in the name of Rav Soloveitchik. They say a lot of things in the name of Rav Moshe Feinstein that he never said. They say in the name of the Chazanish also. I don't know. I find it hard to believe that he would say it's mutter. Anyway, so the Ran and the Dorim quote such a position from the Gaonim. They used to have an Aseres HaDibros and a locket or whatever. And a person would take a shvua by Aseres HaDibros when the Kitas Chetetz, they would say, Ein lo ha-Torah ve-Ein lo ha-Forah. That's a different kind of a shvua. And even though the Chumash has a din of ha-Foras Nedarim, the father or the husband can be made for a neder, and the Torah Shemal Peh has a din of ha-Toras Nedarim, that's on a plain neder in a shvua. But if you have a shvua in the Kitas Chetetz, that's a different level of a shvua. So just like it's more chomer b'negir too, that the shvuas hadayanim has to be dafkim in kitas chayfetz, just like Avraham Avinu wanted the highest, the most serious level of shvua he can possibly get, so he insisted on the kitas chayfetz because it was negir to the whole future of Klal Yisrael. So if a person took a shvua b'nekitas chayfetz, so the Ran quotes such an opinion. Ein lo hafor ve'ein lo hator. The Ran rejects it. He doesn't agree with the guide. He rejects it. He doesn't take a stand on whether he holds from the Aseres HaDibros. Let's say you'll have a Shavuos HaDayanim. That'll be good if you hold on to Aseres HaDibros. The Gemara says you have to hold on to a Sefer Torah. And if the fellow who is swearing is a Tamachachm, if he holds on to a pair of tefillin, it's also good. It means we want to impress upon him Hasiris to Shavuos, only Sefer Torah is impressive. A Talmud Chacham Tefillin is also impressive. So would a but Al Pidin it could be any Chayfetz. It doesn't have to be Tashmishei Kedusha. The Bris Mila is also good. It says Simna Yotcha Tachas Irechi. So would Aseres Adibris be also good? The Goyim claim two Chidushim. Number one, they say hold on to a cloth that has Aseres Adibris. That's called Nikitas Chayfetz. Chidush number one. I don't know if the Ran agrees or disagrees. It doesn't say anything about that. Chidush number two, Shvuah Nikitas Chayfetz is a different Chalas Shem Shvuah. So Chom Ein LaHatar Ein LaHafor. So the Ran says I don't agree with the second half. He doesn't discuss whether he agrees with the first half or not. When Eliezer arrives in Haran, and then Lavan comes to greet him, Rivka comes home, and she says, the guy gave me all the jewelry, and Lavan goes out to outside to see what's doing. So he says, Anochi Penise Habayis, I heard that you came, so we cleared out the whole house, and there's room, you should stay by us. Anochi Penise Habayis. So the Medrash says, Rashi quotes the Medrash, Anochi Penise Habayis Me'avodah Zarah, Me'avodah Zalilim. I know that you're Orthodox, you're a monotheist, so I took out all the idols in your honor. How did the Medrash know that that's Pshat Anochi Penisi Habayis? So the Medrash understands means out of respect for Anochi Hashem Alakecha Penisi Habayis. But how did the Medrash know to touch Anochi Penisi Habayis? Because of Anochi Hashem Alakecha, because you're a monotheist, how did they know to say such a touch? So the Bar Tanure, who wrote the commentary on the Mishnah, has a commentary on Pirish Rashi, Alatar, a super commentary on the Torah. Commentary on Rashi. So he has running commentary, he has interesting comments. On this Rashi, he says, the reason why the Medrash says it is because Lavan was male, he was not female. So for a man, you're supposed to say Ani. For a girl, you say Anochi. The Rebbeinu Shlomo is not a male, not a female. So he says, Anochi Hashem Alokecha. So because Lavan didn't say Ani Penisi Abayis, he said Anochi, so that's a dead giveaway that he means out of respect for Anochi Hashem Alokecha. So this is a question, is that true? That the word Anochi is female? Who ever heard of that? Remember when I was in high school, I had Dr. Breyer, oh, Hashem, I just died last year. I had Dr. Breyer, so I asked him, is there such a thing that the word Anochi is Lashon Nekeva? So he said he never heard of it. Peladikin Bar Timur. Avraham Avinu says, yeah, he was also a man. Anochi Avraham, yeah. Must be a lot of psukim in Tanakh.
Can't be that he's referring to Hashem.
Yes, he's talking about himself. Yeah. Then when Eliezer is presenting the whole story with the Shidduch, so he says they should tell him whether they agree to the Shidduch or not. The efne al yamin or al smol. If they say no, is no, and goodbye and good luck, and I'll look for a different Shidduch. And b'yesh chemos chez lemis asadani hagiduli v'im lo hagiduli. If no is no, the efne al yamin or al smol. So the Sefer Hasidim has a comment on this pasuk. He says, from this pasuk you see that the attitude that a lot of boys have is not right. A boy is chasing after a girl, the girl doesn't want. So he keeps on placing pressure on the girl, keeps on pressuring pressure. He says, in the Torah it says, if the girl says no, is no, goodbye. You look for someone else. You don't keep on chasing after the girl. Some boys feel that it's not a good shidduch unless it's rocky, it's on, it's off, it's on, it's off. And you have to chase after the girl. If there's no chase, so it's not worth it. Not necessarily so. The simple reading of the Gemara in the first half in Tainus on the Abdes Amar Aleph is the Gemara says that Shidduchim Amin Hashemayim. That's what they say. Me Hashem Yatzah Hadover. That's what they said. The Goyim said. Vayan Lovin Amsul. Yom Me Hashem Yatzah Hadover. The Goyim said like that. The Ovdi Avodah Zarah said like that. That the Zivik is Min Hashemayim. So the Gemara says in the end of my Maikotin that we know Dovazem Yitorah. For Dovazem, it's in Kosev HaTorah Shoyim Mavim Mishulish Baksuvim. That zivugim amin hashemayim. Then the Gemara says another opinion that it's just not so. Zivugim anat min hashemayim. People work on it their own, on their own. So the Gemara says a contradiction between the various sources. The Gemara says it depends. Zivig rishon as opposed to zivig sheni. The Gemara says zivig rishon is min hashemayim, and zivig sheni is not. So that's a question. How do you translate the word zivig rishon, zivig sheni? So usually we assume zivig rishon the first marriage. Zivig sheni, person gets married for the second time. The Rambam apparently did not understand like that, because the Rambam writes in the Hakdamah to Pirkei Avos, that's not a Shemayna Prokim. He writes in the Shemayna Prokim that the man has Bechira Chavshas to decide whether he wants to do mitzvahs or averis. And the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't force a person to do mitzvahs, doesn't force a person to do averis. And he quotes the pasuk in Eicha. How does it say? The Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't make a gzeira that you should do ra, that you should do tov. That's your own bechira chavshus. So the Rambam says that people have bechira chavshus to choose whom they want to marry. Because if I'm going to marry a fruma girl, so she's going to keep me in line. I'll marry a prutza, so I'll marry a girl who's not a tznua, a girl who's not observant. So she'll cause me to lead such a style of living. So how can you say that the zivugim amin hashamayim? The zivugim amin hashamayim is the Ribbono Shel Olam is causing me to sin, causing me to be observant in mitzvahs, and that's what the bechira chavshus is all about. So the Rambam says, once in a long while, there's a min hashamayim, a young man is such a wonderful tzaddik, so they'll see as a reward for the tzaddik, they'll give him a knockout shidduch, a good-looking girl with a fine mishpach and a lot of money, and it's a tzaddikus, and it's doing all the milas. And sometimes a person, when he's young, is such a rashi, he deserves to suffer in this world, so they'll give him min hashamayim, a witch of a wife who's going to cause him to suffer and aggravate him for the rest of his life, or he's a witch of a man, he does a lot of averus, so they'll give him a girl who's not religious, and she'll cause him to sin more, and they'll punish him for everything that he did. So in rare cases, the zivik will be min hashamayim as a reward for an outstanding young man, or as a punishment, or young man, young girl, whatever, as a punishment for the person. But that's 98% of the case, the Rambam says that it's not so, the zivugim are not min hashamayim. So this is printed in all the standard Gemaras, in the Shemayna Prokim, the Hakdamah to the commentary of the Rambam, the Pirkei Avos, on the bottom of the page, they have Hevaris from Rabbi Yankiv Hemdin. Rabbi Yankiv Hemdin writes that the Rambam is wrong. It's against the Gemara. The Gemara says that Zivugim Amin Hashemayim. So how did the Rambam read the Gemara? So the Meiri usually follows the Rambam. Ruba de Ruba, most of the time the Meiri follows the Rambam and everything. Rare cases that the Meiri is going to disagree with the Rambam. So the Meiri on the first daf in Soita, the Gemara says that Zivik Rishon is Min Hashemayim, Zivik Sheni is not Min Hashemayim. So he says Zivik Sheni means all of us are Zivik Sheni. When the boy is 22, 23, 24, and the girl is already 19, that's Zivik Sheni. Zivik Rishon is, if the boy gets married, he's just bar mitzvah, and the girl is only 12 years old, that's called Zivik Rishon. And Mizman is everything is Zivik Sheni. I think the Rambam got married when he was in his 30s. He was an Alter Rabach. He didn't get married at 13. He didn't get married at 25. He got married in his 30s or 40s or something. So that was Zivik Sheni. So that's what the Meiri says. So the simple reading of that Gemara on the first half in Soita says that zivugim amin hashamayim. Then the Gemara says, but it says kosher zavgim kekriyas yamsuf. Kosher zavgim doesn't mean that it's not min hashamayim, that people have to work on it. So the Gemara says, yeah, kosher zavgim goes on zivik sheni, and if it would have been a zivik rishon, would have been min hashamayim, would have gone smoothly 1, 2, 3. That's how the Pirush Rashi on Soita. That's how it says in Rashi that if the zivik is min hashamayim, it'll go very smoothly. And if it doesn't go smoothly, it means that it's not min hashamayim. That's a simple reading of the Gemara. So after the stipler passed away, they published a collection of letters that he wrote to people that's called Kreina de Igarta. So I think in the first volume. So he used to have, Bochum used to ask him all kinds of things. He was deaf, he couldn't hear. So the people had to write. So he had a pad when you went to visit him, you have to write on the pad. And he would shout the answer to you. He couldn't hear, so he used to always scream. he would talk. He would talk loud. So when he heard Kriyas HaTorah, he used to stand mamish next to the Balkara, and he still couldn't hear. Mikra Megillah, he used to mamish stand next to the Balkara, and he used to shout when he was there. So that's why he has a lot of letters instead, because by someone else, you wouldn't have letters about these things. You would have a conversation, and they would tell you over. But the stipler had to write letters to people, so they had to write to him. So someone asked him this shaila, that he's going with a girl and it's up and down, does that mean that it's not min hashamayim? So he says, no, who says that if it's min hashamayim, it has to be smooth sailing? Maybe it's min hashamayim, that it should be rocky, up and down, up and down. I don't know, so he doesn't address the Gemara in the first daf in Soita. The simple reading of the Gemara in Soita is like that, like the Bachar asked, that if it would have been min hashamayim, it would have gone smoothly. And kosher v'zabgim kikriyas yamsuf means that it's rocky and difficult. That's only by Zivik Sheni. Anyway, they finally agreed to the Shidduch. Hashem Yatzah Dover. So she's going to go, she's going to marry the guy. Then when she was about to leave, so they gave him a blessing. She should have a lot of babies. So it says in the Ramon Shulchan Aruch that that pasuk that was recited by these of the Avodah Zarah, that's the pasuk that that we bless a girl. If a young girl gets married, if a woman is remarrying and she's 75 years old, marrying a guy is 85 years old, so you don't give her the bracha. But a young girl is getting married who wants to have a lot of babies, so you give her a bracha. So it says when the chassan does the badekin, the rabbonim go along, and the rabbonim are supposed to say these brachas. So we choose, so some have a taina, why do we say the bracha that these of the avodas are recited? We should have said a different bracha from a tzaddik. But Lamai said that's what we say. By bracha es rivka v'yomer lach haseinu atayili alfe revova v'yirash zarecha shar soinov. Says that they got married. By v'yehu Yitzchak ha'ohel asarim avikach es rivka v'atilo lisha v'yehu v'yehu v'yinochem Yitzchak acharei imo. So Rabbi Hirsch points out in his commentary, it's not like modern people that when they go out on dates, then they fall in love and then they get married to the girl that they fell in love with. You see that Yitzchak sent Eliezer, and they brought the girl back, and he looked at the girl, nice girl, okay, he married her. Then Vayehavel, he loves her after he lives with her. Then he loves her. You don't fall in love. Once you fall in love, so you already can't think. So you can't think straight. But is this a good shidduch? It's not a good shidduch. You already fell in love. He ignores all the facts. You gotta be careful not to fall in love too soon. So after you check everything out, that it should stim, everything else can make sense. The story is written such a long ariches, Avraham Avinu negotiating with Eliezer, and then Eliezer goes and he tells over the whole story. So the Medrash comments on that, on this parsha. Why is it such an ariches? We have halachas that learned that from one letter in the Torah, from a nuance in the Chumash. And here it's a balabetcha, such a long ariches. So the Medrash has such a famous comment that the sichosim shalav de ha'avos is more chaviv to HaKadosh Baruch Hu than terosim shalav avos. There are some shalabonim that dinim that are just learned that from a letter, from a half a word. And here, sichosim shalav diavos is barichas yisera. It's talking very strange. Why is that the case? So the Velt says that Eliezer was a very learned fellow. It's called Damesik Eliezer. So the Pashup Shat is he was born in Damesik. And then the Medr says, Dor Lamashki Mitoras Rabbah. He was the outstanding Talmud. He was the best Talmud of Avraham Avinu. He learned Torah. And he picked up all of his hanhoges, and he knew all of his nuances. He knew all the whole mahalach hamachshava of Avraham Avinu. The Chazal say that sichas chulin shel tamir chachamim tzvicha talmud. When a talmud chacham talks sichas chulin, he's talking about the weather, talking about politics. You have to be learned to understand what he said. A lot of times, when Rav Soloveitchik made jokes and made comments, so those who weren't students of him didn't even understand what he was saying. Because he used to use Talmudic terminology, or he used to use his terminology. In his writings, a lot of times he writes an expression, and if you didn't read the other essay, you don't know what that expression means. You know what every word means in English. He delivered the shir in the later years, he delivered the shir in English. Earlier, he delivered the shir in Yiddish. Chayvot alayma b'lashon rabba. So he said exactly word for word the way his father said. Well, a lot of times we wouldn't understand, why does he use such a funny expression? He was saying over verbatim what he heard from his father. Then one fine day when he realized that there was one student who didn't understand Yiddish, there was a Sephardic student. He had in earlier years had Sephardic students, but they had learned in yeshivas and they knew Yiddish. This Sephardic student never learned in a real yeshiva before. He went to Yale University, then he came to learn in yeshiva after graduating Yale. So Rabbi Soloveitchik switched the shiur to English in order that he should understand. So when he said in English, he had a translator. He can no longer say exactly the way he heard from his father. But the Gemara has, so in a lot of his essays, he uses certain expressions. And everybody knows all the words that he's saying, but they don't know what the connotation is of that expression. If you read the other essay, he has a whole two pages to explain in his vocabulary, in his lexicon, what that expression means. So a lot of times he would say, Sichas Chulin, and talk about the weather, and the barbershop, talk about politics or something. They really didn't understand what he was talking about. He was always talking with his concepts, with his ideas. So that's what the Gemara says. Sichas chulam shel tamid chacham and tzricha limud. A person has to be learned in order to understand the sichas chulam tamid chacham. So we assume that Mistam Eliezer, Eved Avram, he was Dorla Mashke Mitoris Rabbah, that's why he's known as Damesek Eliezer. He probably also spoke the same lingo like Avram Avinu. So his Sichas Chulin wasn't really Sichas Chulin, it was really Sichas Kodesh. Why? Because the Pasuk says, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Deis, Bechol Derechecha Da'ehu, quotes the Pasuk from Mishlei. What does it mean? A person shouldn't divide his life into two and think when he's davening, when he's learning, when he's doing mitzvahs, that's Avodas Hashem, and then when he makes a living, when he goes home and he spends time with his wife and his children, that's secular. There's no secular. Bechol Derechecha Da'ehu, everything is religious all day long. Even the secular things that he does, he makes a living and he eats and he drinks and he goes to sleep and he has a family and so on. Everything can be elevated to the level of Avodas Hashem. If he does everything l'shem shemayim, he has to make a living in order to be able to do mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim and so on. So that the sichas chulin of the Talmid Chachamim is not really sichas chulin; it's really sichas kodesh. So that's where the Medrash has such a lesson that yofes sichasam shalav the yofes yosim et terasim shalabanim, because the sichas chulin of the Talmid Chachamim is not really sichas chulin.
Why wasn't the Talmid Chachamim the Osik Torah?
I guess they also converted. He had a lot of converts. Avraham Avinu had a lot of Jews. What Torah did they learn? There was Yeshiva Shem Yeva. One Medrash has it that after the Akedah, Yitzchak went to the Yeshiva Shem Yeva and he heard about his mother's death way after. He wasn't there by the funeral. It doesn't say he was there. So one Medrash says he wasn't there, found out later. Yeah, what were they learning in Yeshiva Shem Yeva? They were not Jewish. So some say that they were learning Noshim and Ezekin. They say jokingly the tradition of Lithuanian yeshivas to study Noshim and Ezekin is a carryover from Yeshiva Shem Yeva, because the Gemara says a non-Jew is only permitted to learn Sheva Mitzvahs did who? Sheva Mitzvahs is Noshim and Ezekin. Kochim and Taris and Zroim and Moed, that's only for the Jews. So the non-Jews are not allowed to study that. But Noshim and Ezekin, that's about Gilei Arayis, Shvichas Domim, Eiv Merachai, that Gezel Dinim. That's the Dinim that the non-Jews are allowed to learn. I don't know, it's unclear. It's unclear what was Avraham Avinu learning, what were the Goyim learning. I don't know. Rashi has a comment towards the end of the parsha. It says, "V'levnei apilak shem asheli Avraham nasan Avraham atanos v'yishalchem kedma leretz kedem." He sent him away. What exactly did he give? Different versions in the Medrash. So Rashi has a famous comment. "V'levnei apilak shem is chaser yud." The word Pilakshim is written missing a yud. So it's the reason why it's missing a yud is in order to indicate there was only one Pilagesh. He's only married to Keturah. And then one Medrash has it that Keturah is Hagar. So Lamai said there was only one other woman in his life. He had Sarah, and he had Keturah, and he didn't have any other Pilakshim. And Keturah was Hagar, showing those were the two wives. That's one Medrash says like that. So the Sifse Chachamim is bothered with the question that in our editions of the Sefer Torah, the word Pilakshim is written with a yud. But now Pilakshim Shin Yud Meh. It's written with a yud, so this plural. So the Pashtus is that this is one of the several instances where there's a contradiction between what it says in the Medrash and the Masor that we have. Rabbi Kivegra, Masor Chashabas, gives you a whole list in the Gilyan Hashas, in the Nuns, somewhere in the Nuns, on an Amid base. He gives you a long list of Maram Kaimus, where the Gemara, the Bali Ateswas, have one reading in the Chumash, and our Masor has differently. The Sifse Chachamim asked the Kasha, it's spelled with a yud. So he quotes a Psafani Teretz from a Sefer. He says, no, it should really be spelled Pilak Shiyim with two yuds. It's only written with one yud, that's the yud that's missing. It should be written Pilak Shiyim, Gimel Shin, Yud, Yud, Mem. And only it's written with one yud, so that's the indication. Why should it be written Pilak Shiyim? Sometimes you have Yehudiyim. And Megillah says it's spelled Yehudiyim, but it's pronounced Yehudim. It's a Greek city, you don't pronounce it. Shvera Sifse Chachamim. The Pashtus is that Rashi, that Medrash had a different reading. Had a Chosayu. What exactly is the connection between the Parsha and the Haftorah? So in both the Parsha and the Haftorah, and the Parsha of Avraham Avinu is concerned about the future of Klal Yisrael, and the Haftorah, Dovan HaMelech is concerned about the future of the Malchus Beis David, which is a crucial aspect of the Klal Yisrael. Malchus Beis David is the Malchus Anav Cheres. And he doesn't just say, look, it's the Ribbono Shel Olam's religion, so let him take care of it. That's what I would say. It's the Ribbono Shel Olam's world, it's the Ribbono Shel Olam's religion, let the Ribbono Shel Olam take care of it. So the Torah says you're not supposed to have that attitude. the real manigi ador are supposed to be concerned about helping the Rebbe Shalom, to see to it that that the future will be secured. So that's why Avraham Avinu finds an obligation to make Eliezer swear b'shvul minikitas chayfetz that he's going to get the right girl. And that's why David HaMelech has to take this thing. Why does he have to get involved? Let the Rebbe Shalom take care of it. The Rebbe Shalom told them in a void. The pasuk says in Divrei Hayom that the Rebbe Shalom told David HaMelech b'ruach HaKodesh b'nevuah that Shlomo HaMelech is going to take over after he died. Shlomo HaMelech was younger than it. Who is the one over here? Adoniyah ben Chagiz was the oldest son. If I would be Adoniyah ben Chagiz, I would think I'm also going to take over. Usually the Bechor takes over. He was a chatzuf. He took over while the father was still alive. That's not right. The father was old and sick and he wasn't functioning well. He didn't know what was going on outside. So this Adoniyah ben Chagiz, his mother's name was Chagiz. Adoniyah ben Chagiz, he decided ani amloch and he made parties. He coronated himself as the king. So David HaMelech knew b'nevuah when the Rebbe Shlomo has to make Shlomo the king. So he took a stand. He declared him as the king. So that's number one. You see that the leaders of the Jewish people are supposed to do something to secure the future, not just say that the Rebbe Shlomo take care of it. And then you see number two, that the women, in both cases, the women, as much as the men, or perhaps more so than the men, have a lot of input in determining the future. The Jewish people is not just a nation of men. They're women and they have a lot to say. They covey a lot, like over here. Bathsheba was the one who went to negotiate with David HaMelech. She didn't just let Nosan HaNavi take care of it. She instigated the whole thing. She went to Nosan HaNavi, she tumbled, and then she saw to it that the nevuah that David HaMelech had gotten, that he wasn't allowed. And Divrei Hayomim says, David HaMelech says, Hashem told me, Dam Rab Shafachto, you killed a lot of people. He killed all the terrorists. So he's not allowed to build a Beis HaMikdash. He's going to have a son, Shlomo. He's going to be an Ishalom. He's going to build a Beis HaMikdash. He told the Nevuah all of that. So, but the Nevim who told it to him, Nasan HaNavi, all the others, they weren't doing anything on their own. It was Bathsheba who did. And then in the Parsha also, you see, Sarah had a big influence on Avraham Avinu on last week's Sedra, and Rachel, Rivka, all the Emoras. They all had a big influence. The only difference was that their influence was behind the scenes. That's how in English there's such an expression. Behind every famous man, behind every successful man, is a woman who pushes him to be successful. So traditionally in Judaism, the women played a major role, but it's always Bitzinah, not Befrahesa. In recent times, they have the women's lib movement, so they want the women should be Befrahesi, everything should be Befrahesi. That's because the men insist that we live in a time, in the modern world, and the men don't know what's Neasis. Men want everything to be Befrahesi. The Rebbe Shalom created us all, B'Tzalim Elokim, with Midas of Elokus. One of the major Midas of Elokus is that the Rebbe Shalom is a Kel Mistater. That's how Yishai HaNavi describes the Rebbe Shalom. A Kel Mistater, he's a hiding God. He does such a good job hiding that there are a lot of people who don't even realize that he's there on the other side of the fence. But he's there, and he's hiding. And he wants us to, he implanted within us this midah velukus of tznius. That's what tznius means. Bitzina, to do everything bitzina as opposed to farasya. Sometimes you have no choice. I'm giving a shir, it's bifarasya. You have a chazan, he davens faran, bifarasya. And you have a city, you have a mayor, and you have a rosh hamemshalah, a rabbi of the community. He's doing everything b'fahesi. You have no choice. Sometimes you have to do things b'fahesi. Sometimes the Rebbe Shalom does a gilui shechina. He made Maimon Hasina. Every so often he does gilui shechina. But most of the time he's a kel mistate. He's hiding. So the Rebbe Shalom wants that everybody should lead a private life. He told us for halachta bedrochov, we should preserve the midas of elokus that we have. One of the midas of elokus that he implanted within us is this mid of tznius. You should hatznei alechesim alakecha. And even when you have to do things b'frahesi, you have no choice. He said, let the men do it. He doesn't want the women to do it. The women should preserve their tznius. It's not that we don't allow the women. We don't have the women violate their tznius. The Rebbe Shalom wants that the women should always retain their tznius. So in the Tanakh, you have in Haftorah and in the Parsha, the Ovis are the ones that are doing things in public, and the Emoras or Bathsheba doing things behind the scenes. And it could be that without the Emoras, the Ovis would not have succeeded. And David HaMelech would have perhaps not, the way the story is told in the Haftarah, maybe he would not have taken a stand, and maybe it would have been Adoniyah would have been the king, and the whole Machlokes Beis David would have collapsed then. So the women traditionally always do behind the scenes. So in recent years, the men are becoming more farhesia. The men are doing everything. There's no more tzniyos by men. So the women want to do also the farhesia, everything with farhesia. The whole movement is not right. Rav Soloveitchik used to say that today a person says, make sure you spell my name right in the newspaper. Say whatever you want about me, good or bad, whatever you say, but make sure you spell my name right. Everybody's interested in publicity and advertisement and making everything in their lives into farhesia. This is against the whole thrust of the Jewish tradition. We want to do things b'tzinah. That's ne'alecha simalakecha. And by the women, we're more medactic about doing things b'tzinah. Melech v'loy malka. Son chasim alecha melech. Melech v'loy malka. Even when you have to compromise, you have to have kohanim, akru kabonis in the Beis HaMikdosh, and you have to appoint a rabbi in a community, you have to have a shlech tziba davens for an amid. So all this should be done by men. We don't want women to do it. You have a lot of times there are men who are always running to daven for an amid. The guy has one day has yahrzeit for his mother, then he has yahrzeit for his grandmother, then he has yahrzeit for his uncle. So he always has to say mafter, because every week he has yahrzeit for someone else. So that's taka not right. That's so the women got it from the men. The men always insist. The men take it over the years. The men have taken it that the right to daven for an amid, the right to say mafter, that's like an empowerment. So the women want to be empowered also. So the whole thing is not right by the men. We shouldn't let such mishugoyim daven for an amid. If the guy is always grabbing daven, we shouldn't let them. That's the story that I told over about the Chassidish Rebbe. That in Europe the highways were not paved. So in the wintertime when it would be snow or rain, so there'd be big mud puddles. So very often the horse pulling the wagon would get stuck in a mud puddle, wouldn't be able to get out. So they would have to empty out all the luggage and take out all the people and loosen the horse and pull out the wagon. That whole Isaac, how they're going to get out. So they tell the story that once the horse and the wagon got stuck in a mud puddle and they just couldn't get anything. They couldn't get it to move. They got everybody out, pushing, pulling in all directions. They got people from the neighboring homes. Nothing helped. So they didn't know what to do. So someone said, there's a Chassidish Rebbe who lives in a nearby village. Someone should walk there and ask him what to do. So they went to the Rebbe. So the Rebbe said they should take the omer, the shtender, that the chazan stands by. When he davens in shul, take the shtender, the omer, and put it next to the blot. So they put it next to the blot, next to the matpal, and the horses walked down. So they went back to the Rebbe. They asked him, how did he know this meifes? How did he know that the horse is going to come out? So he said in Yiddish, the fet leif an alamot suits a moment. The horses always run to daven for an omer. He meant the men who act like horses. So that's the problem. The reason why the women want to daven for an omer, they want to have the women's prayer groups and so on, is because they see by the men that the men take it as an act of empowerment, which is not right. They want to daven for an omer. It says in the Mishnah, we were just discussing the other day. The more comments on the Mishnah in Brachos, when the Gabbai yesked the daven for an omer, he's supposed to refuse the first two times. He should say, I'm not worthy to. Now that you should run to daven for an omer. The horses run to daven for an omer. A normal person is supposed to refuse because it's considered a big kibbutz. So Derech Eretz dictates he should refuse. The Mishnah just says if there's a shliach tzibbe gets stuck in the middle and yamarachet tachtav, so then you shouldn't refuse the gabbai because it's a shas atchak, so you have to run to help. The closing line in the Haftarah is very strange. David HaMelech is old and sick, he's ready to die, and he's saying that he wants Shlomo HaMelech to take over, not Adoniyah ben Chagis. And then she gives him a bracha, he should live forever. What do you mean he should live forever? He's not going to live forever. What does that mean? So the Pashup Shat means like this. She comes to David HaMelech and they're negotiating who's going to take over after he dies. She's much younger than David, obviously. She's a younger woman. And they negotiate that her son Shlomo HaMelech is going to die. So one might think, okay, go drop dead and my son is going to take over. So she says, no, my husband, the king, you should live forever. We're just talking when you'll die. Lachamebi Yisum Shana. Not that I want you to die right now. He's just Derech Eretz dictates. She say you should live at Mebi Yisum Shana. But what we just negotiated that Shlomo should take over. That's after you die. Now, I'm not going to take over now while you're alive. That's the Poshup Shat. And others have a whole interpretation. Others interpret based on the Rambam and the Pirush HaMishnayos and Perek Chelek. The Rambam lists off the Yud Gimel Ikari Hamunah. To one of the Ikari Hamunah is that we believe in Bias HaMashiach. Who is the Mashiach? Going to be Mashiach ben David. So the Rama Madzah, Mashiach ben David, a descendant of Shlomo HaMelech. Where does that say? A descendant of Shlomo HaMelech. We're not sure exactly where. So they point out there are psukim and novi, which perhaps sound like that. We don't know exactly where is the mark of the Rambam. that the Mashiach is going to be not enough that he's going to be a descendant of David HaMelech, he's going to be a descendant of David HaMelech through Shlomo HaMelech. So if that is the case, that's what some interpret. After he says he's going to see to it that Shlomo HaMelech is going to take over, so then she says the Malchus Beis David will continue forever. If it would have been taken over by Adonio Ben Chagis, so then there was no Haftocha. The Haftocha is in Tanakh. The Haftocha says Beferish. When Shlomo HaMelech will take over and he'll follow the mitzvahs HaTorah, then the Malchus Beis David will live on forever. Now we don't have a Malchus Beis David, but it means there will be a Melech HaMashiach in the future. So that's how others interpret. Now that you've appointed Shlomo HaMelech, so the Nevuah will be fulfilled, that Yechi Adoni HaMelech David means does mean that you personally will live forever. It's not a prayer he should have an Arichas Yamin. It's not a statement. It's a statement that now the Haftocha of the Navi will be fulfilled, that the Malchus Beis David will last on. Okay, so what's the story? Sunday morning is the midterm. Sunday morning, bright and early, 10 o'clock in the morning. Okay. And we'll have a regular shir at 11:30. Okay, I think Rabbi Twersky is the guest of Shabbos. Everyone is invited to stay. So he's going to give insightful drushes. Is there anybody staying here with insight? I mean, he's not going to incite anybody to do anything well. With deep insight. Is anybody